The format of this meeting is 2 10-minute speakers followed by our informational break, and then our main speaker who will speak for 30 minutes. Our first speaker, our first 10-minute speaker is John Chun.
That's good. Yeah, that's fine. Hi, my name is John Chun, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. Wow, this is a big meeting. Let's see. 10 minutes is so short. I've never spoken for only 10 minutes in my whole entire life. My sobriety date is August 28th, 2009. I'll have 8 years in a couple months. My home group is the NYU group, and I do service also at 9th Avenue. I have a sponsor. I've had tons of sponsors, and I have sponsees. I've done the steps a few times out of the big book, and I take my sponsees through the steps the same way. And I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I was like asked to speak the other day, and then I was like, oh, wow, 10 minutes, I got to make it succinct. And I was going to think about what I said, and I don't remember any of it. I was really unsuccessful at living life. Sometimes I'm still unsuccessful, but at least I'm willing to give it a shot now. I grew up outside of Dayton, Ohio, in a very sort of like normal town, USA, where everybody else seemed really normal, and I came out of the womb feeling like I didn't belong there, like I was less than everybody else, and I wanted to run away all the time. I wanted to run away from home to find home somehow. I just always felt this big disconnect. And I think I ended up drinking over those feelings of disconnection and looking for connection. And I was really uncomfortable in my skin for a really long time. And then finally I found that comfort, right, in bottles of like brown whiskey, and I was like throwing up on the sides of patios, but I was like finally like at peace with myself, and I could be at peace with the people around me. When I was growing up in normal town Ohio, God, like, this imagery was like really on offer to me with like Young Life and Methodist Church, and like I saw all those bright shiny peers of mine who seem to have like that connection with each other and with God, and I really wanted it. Like, I wanted it bad. I tried really hard, but I couldn't. I felt like it was false. I thought that it was my fault and that God didn't want to have anything to do with me. And so I really like, that's what I really took matters into my own hands, and I started drinking and using, and I went from zero to dropping out of college in a matter of weeks. A lot of messed up stuff happened in that 18 years of my using, right? So the highlights are being arrested, living in a Buick, being evicted, and then finally able to pull it together just enough after I was arrested to move it to New York to be a star. I hadn't taken any classes or anything. Like, I had no training, but my mind told me, like, unreliable, said that you could do that. And so what I ended up doing is I became a DJ, and I started DJing all over the place. And actually, as sort of as I started to get kind of successful on the outside, look, if you're going to be an active alcoholic, which I don't suggest, get a job in nightlife. Like, I was the smartest guy in the world because I didn't have to go to bed, or I didn't go to work until 11 p.m., and I got paid to drink, and I got applause, and that connection thing, I really found it. I really found it. I was like the puppet master of the nightclub, you know? It was great. It was great, and it was like terrifying because it started to, like I said, as soon as I started to get kind of successful, it really got dark for me sort of internally. I was having a really hard time getting to work at 11 p.m. I was, I couldn't participate. Everything in my life was so overwhelming. You know, it's that stuff that just all adds up and all adds up. And I was having panic attacks, and I wasn't bathing, and I wasn't leaving my house. And, like, it was dark. It was really dark. And I knew, thank you, I knew that something had to change. And, like, the three hardest years of my life, it wasn't when my dad died. It wasn't when I was getting arrested. It wasn't a lot of really dark stuff that happened to me. It was the 3 years that I knew I had to quit drinking, that I was bound and determined to stop on my own, because this was, AA was not an option. So I spent 3 years really trying very, very hard to control my drinking and stop drinking and let me figure this out. Just let me figure this out. Just let me figure this out. And that is some incomprehensible, I almost cursed, demoralization. Because you're just failing, and you're failing, and you're failing, and you're failing, and you're waking up, or you're waking up and being like, how did that happen? Or for me, frequently, I would just be at home at like 8 o'clock in the morning and just wasted and crying my face off until I fell asleep. And then somehow I would just talk myself into doing it all over again the next day. So finally, in 2009... it slipped out magically out of my mouth to a friend. You don't drink? Will you take me to a meeting with you? And then I was like, wait, who said that? And you know, I went to Perry Street for my first meeting because, this is funny. We walked into NYU and I sat down and she grabbed me immediately and pulled me out of there. And like, look, this is day one. I was freaking out. And she's like, we can't stay here. And I was like, oh, yes. And she's like, this is a business meeting. If you stay in this meeting, you will definitely drink. Which is true. So we went to Perry Street. And, you know, I found my first sponsor at that meeting, who's an amazing guy, who told me to, like, wrap myself in gauze and, like, take it really easy and be really gentle. If you're new, if you're counting days, if this is your first year, man, I mean, I love you. God bless you. Calm down. Just take it easy. It's going to be all right. Convalesce. Allow yourself to have this time, right? You are repairing a lot of damage. Listen to your sponsor, hang out with your running buddies, eat and smoke cigarettes and complain. That's what you're supposed to do. And I did all that. And that year I barely worked, and I look back on it now as like super important and really vital to me. Because I allowed myself that time to develop a relationship with God, which is the most important relationship in my life. I love getting up in the morning now and praying and meditating. I pray so much now, like all the time throughout the day. You know, my favorite slogan is keep coming back. And I think it, right, keep coming back to meetings, sure. But for me, it's about when I go off and I wander, which happens all the time, I just like keep coming back, right? I like realize, oh, I'm over there and I'm taking control and I'm like planning out this future that doesn't exist. And I like keep coming back to this moment to, and then my prayer is like, thank you, God. I love you, God. Please take care. Ooh, hello. Please take care of me. Please take care of me and show me who you would have me be today. You know, my life is beyond my wildest dreams. 1 minute. Okay. I just finished last week a 550-mile bike ride from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And talk about conscious contact. I was riding my bike down this mountain, and it was all I could see was like sky and mountain, and I was like crying. And I was so, so grateful. You know, I used to be so racked with fear. And for a guy that couldn't get to work at 11 p.m., right, I was, you know, that bloat that we get? You know, like I had that. I was not in shape to do anything. and the life I have today, the fact that I have paid back like tens of thousands of dollars to the IRS, the fact that I have jobs and that I have relationships with my family, the fact that I can get here and show up for this is all because of Alcoholics Anonymous and my relationship with God. Thank you very, very much for asking me to speak, and bless you all. Thanks.
Our second 10-minute speaker is Becky.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Becky. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, wow. There's a lot of people here. I want to start out by thanking Randy for asking me to speak. It was funny when she, when I had the opportunity to meet her and she asked me to come out, After vomiting, I told her I didn't think I had enough time. Like, I've heard of your group, and I don't have enough time for the commitment. She said, then you could be our 10-minute speaker. So I didn't get out of it. But I'm really honored to be here, in all seriousness. My name is, again, I'm an alcoholic. My name is Becky, and I have a sobriety date. It is August 31st of 2015. I have a home group. It is the Kitchen Table Group. We meet in South Philadelphia at 18th and Wolf. If you guys are ever in the neighborhood, we would love to have you. It's a very similar format to this. On Wednesday nights, we have a 10-minute speaker followed by our main speaker. And then on Monday nights, we do a big book study. That starts at 8 o'clock, but we feed you first and at 6:30. So if you're in our neighborhood and hungry, come on out. We'd love to have you. Little pitch. You know, I suffered from alcoholism. You know, I absolutely suffered. And I didn't even know that's what I was suffering from. I grew up in a crazy family. I was an awkward, shy, scared kid from a very early age. I didn't have a drink before the first day of kindergarten, but I absolutely needed one. I was just always a scared kid. And I looked out at the world around me growing up, and it seemed like everybody knew what was going on better than me. Like, it was like they had answers to questions that I didn't even know to ask. And living just seemed easy for them, and it just was not easy for me. Living was difficult for me. I would look at airplanes flying overhead and wish I was in them. You know, I would lay in my bed at night and pray to whatever God I thought I understood to, like, take me somewhere else. You know, just be anybody but me. And then I took a drink. It was Bartles and James wine coolers. I remember what I was wearing. I remember who I was with. I remember. And prior to that moment, I couldn't have told you what I was suffering from. I didn't know that I was a terrified, you know, shy, awkward kid. I didn't know that I was suffering from this spiritual malady of disconnection. You know, and I didn't know that I was so self-consumed and self-obsessed that my biggest fear was what you thought of me. But I take that drink, and it fixed all of that. And it wasn't like, I say it like, you know, suddenly I could talk to the boys, or I could talk to you, or I could talk to whatever, you know, and it wasn't just that. It wasn't that I could talk to you. It was that I was absolutely certain that you wanted to talk to me. And that was really new for me, you know, like I was always the center of my own universe, but I was the center of yours now too. You know, and it just opened up this whole world for me. Alcohol probably saved my life before it almost took it. Because, I probably would have eaten a gun, you know, as a teenager. I absolutely, didn't know how to live and, thought I was an alien. And I start drinking and it fixed that. And the problem for a guy like me is if you give me that kind of answer without even, I didn't know what I was signing up for, but I was instantly and immediately willing to pay any price. It just kind of like when I got a sponsor and she said, are you willing to go to any lengths? And I'm dying, so I nod, you know, the nodding bobblehead, say, yes, I'm willing. I didn't know what I was signing up for, you know, And when I got that relief in alcohol, and you asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths to get more, yes. You know, and I didn't know at that time that I would pay you know, with my, you know, with relationships with my children, with relationships with my family, you know, with jobs and homelessness and all that stuff, you know, and my dignity and my soul. I didn't know, you know, sitting, you know, at a keg party with my sister and, you know, in the woods with a bunch of high school kids running around, that that's the prices I was signing up to pay. But I absolutely was. I was a smart kid. I was good in school. And then I started drinking. And from that day forward, I never cared about another grade. You know, which doesn't mean at, you know, the age of 13 that I suddenly became around the clock, you know, drinking, you know, a handle of vodka a day kind of girl. But, it just kind of changed my course. You know, it changed the course of the direction I was headed. And alcohol started making all my decisions for me. It decided whether or not I went to school. Yeah, I didn't. You know, thank you. And it made all my choices for me. And then I got sober. You know, I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm absolutely suffering from this thing that is killing me. And I bounced in and out of treatment centers and rehabs for a really long time. And I had judges and counselors and lawyers and people telling me that, Becky, if you just stopped drinking, things would get better. If you would just put down this drink, you'd be okay. But what happens for me is I put down this drink and you took away the only answer I've ever known for the problem that is me. And so I stop drinking and I get crazier. I stop drinking and I suffer more. And you tell me to sit here and just don't drink. And I can't. The loneliest time in my life was probably from the day that I was first introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous until I finally actually got sober and found an answer in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that doesn't mean that there wasn't an answer presented to me. It just means I didn't hear it. There was probably too many voices in my own head worrying about, you know, what my next share was going to be. You know, and what happened for me is I came across a group of people that had a light in their eyes that were in the center of Alcoholics Anonymous, although I didn't even know that they were. You know, and they looked happy. And they didn't even talk about drinking much. You know, they used words like freedom. And they talked about God. And they talked about, you know, sponsorship and helping others and selflessness and altruism and all these things that, as smart as I think I am, were completely, totally foreign concepts to me. And instead of telling me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, they said, get in my car and come with me. And I got sober in the backseat of a car to and from meetings all over the you know, tri-state area. And I get in this car and I drive around with these ladies and I see what they're doing. One of the things that I hear in Alcoholics Anonymous a lot is they say, like, you guys love me until I could love myself. And it sounds cute because you guys did love me. But what's even more important than that is that you loved me when I was very unlovable. You know, I'm hitting on your men, I'm stealing from your basket, and I'm, you know, Sharon's drunk. You know, like, I did not come in here the poster child for successful Alcoholics Anonymous. And you guys tolerated me, and you put up with me, and you loved me, and you said, come with me. And you showed me these things, and you said, Becky, you've been a liar and a thief your entire life. How about instead of pretending you're having an experience that clearly you're not having, you shut up, come with us, do what we do, and maybe you'll get where we are. And that's what I did. You know, I found God in spite of myself. I found God when I wasn't looking for him. I didn't come here looking for God and new meaning to my life. I just wanted to put the fire out. You know, my life was burning to the ground around me and I just wanted it to stop. And what I found instead was so much more than I ever could ask for. You know, I didn't come here looking for peace of mind. You know, I came here looking to get off probation. You know, I came here looking to have my kids recognize me on Mother's Day. You know, I came here looking to, like, want to stop wanting to drink more than I wanted to breathe. And if I got what I was praying for and what I was looking for, I would have so sold myself short. Because what I found is this amazing way of life. You know, what I found was I have the honor and privilege of sponsoring women today. And it really is an honor and a privilege. You know, I spent nearly a decade out there listening to speakers up here thinking if I only had what they had, I could be okay. You know, and so to be up here is, well, crazy. But like the fact that anybody would see something in me that they wanted other than the money that I owed you is phenomenal. you know, and these women, you know, they come up to me and I bring, you know, I bring like a big book study into a house, you know, and I see these women wake up, you know, and I see them get their families back and I see them get their lives back and I see them reconnect. And that is priceless. You cannot put a price tag on that and you can't buy it. And I thought it was just magic, you know, and I thought that my sponsor was a magician. And what I realized when I became one is that she isn't the magician, that it's just God, you know, and I get to be this channel today. And I did not come here looking for God. But I know today, the one thing that I know today that I never, ever, ever believed is that he's got me and I'm going to be okay. And that is phenomenal. And with that, thank you so much.
My name's Jim. I'm an alcoholic. It's good to be here. It's good to be sober. My sobriety date is November 19th, 1987. My home group's a sponsorship group. We meet Sunday night in Chatham, New Jersey at 8:30. It's an open meeting. We welcome everyone. And thank you for the two 10-minute speakers. It was good. I enjoyed both of them. I'm alcoholic, and I think that makes me a little strange sometimes. Or makes me feel strange. It makes me not talk into the microphone. I've always had a weird way of seeing things that I didn't think was weird, but everybody else did. I always felt like I had to rehearse conversations beforehand. I felt like nobody got it. You know, I would say things that in my mind were brilliant, and the reaction was totally unexpected. I've heard people say things. I thought they were cute and just inappropriate, disgusting, just racist. Just people would describe things. I was just trying to be funny. But anyhow, I started drinking at 16 and, I lasted about 10, 11 years. And, my life got better at first. I wasn't so uncomfortable. I wasn't sounding things out before I said them. I said them regardless of the consequences. This kid Mark called me up, and he was a bad kid. I always preferred bad kids over good kids. I didn't understand how to speak to good kids. If you were emotionally developed at all and a guy trying to make friends with me, I thought you were trying to have sex with me. I didn't understand that's how people were. I wanted to have a friend, but I mean that would just mean that you couldn't have any other friends. Well, this kid calls me and he said, "Jimmy, I got a case of Budweiser and some girls," and I was very excited about the girls. I was 16. I've been trying to get married since I was 5. And I had some ideas about these pretty girls that were going to show up in the car. And so a car pulled in the driveway. I ran out the front door, almost ripped it off the hinges. I ran down to the car, and the back door opened up, and this girl hopped out. And I looked at her, and I'm thinking, get back in the car before the neighbors see you. I mean, no, don't get it wrong. My standards are low. They're very, very low. Okay, so long as no one's watching. You know, and obviously this girl's standards were low because she liked me. I mean, after she had a couple of drinks. What happened was I had a beer, and I didn't want one, but everybody else was drinking, and I didn't enjoy it because it was skunky. It had been in the bushes for a few days. And I finished it, and I made a mistake of crunching the can and throwing it on the floor, and somebody offered me another one. I would have kept it had I known they were going to give me another one. And so I drank a second one, and then I don't know how many I drank, but something made me a little bit different than everybody else. Because after a couple of beers, I looked over, and she lost 15 pounds. I didn't know what happened exactly. I noticed that she had that look in her eyes that made me feel like I knew her forever. And I talked to her. I said some things, and she laughed like she thought I was funny. And she said some things that I thought were funny. And, you know, my life came together. I had another couple of beers, I think, and you know, we kissed. I hadn't done that before. I couldn't even kiss my mother. You know what I mean? I didn't know how to do it. It was like awkward. Everything was awkward. And I was thinking Budweiser, the king of beers. I understood what the commercial was talking about. And then I just kept drinking, and a little while later I was kissing her sister. And she seemed to not like her sister. I tried to convince him there was enough to go around. And that's sort of how my drinking went. I soon hit my first bottom. I was laying face down in the gravel parking lot. I had cinders on my tongue, rocks in my face. And one of these girls was stepping on my back. Apparently I said something. It seems that from the earliest days of my drinking, I was the only one enjoying it. I don't know what I told her. It could have been referral to Weight Watchers or electrolysis or something that she found offensive. But it wasn't pretty. It was like my whole life before I started drinking was just painfully silent, where I was thinking about what I should have said. And I should have said, I should. And then I started drinking, and I had a comment on everything. And, fast forward 10, 11 years, I end up in a rehab. And the years in between, I had seen some specialists. Everybody thought I should talk to somebody. Even well before I started drinking, they were like, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with this kid? He's hitting people. You know, he's just swearing. You know, he's just putting tacks on the teacher's chair. He's lighting fire. There's something wrong with you, kid. You know." And so they sent me to people, you know, to fix me. I couldn't do it. I couldn't get honest with these people enough to affect any sort of change because it seemed like they were judging me. My whole life, it seemed like it was an endless series of additions. And then what happened was I go to rehab, and some guy comes from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think he had about 3 years, and I didn't think it was something you want to brag about. He seemed happy about it, which I didn't understand. And then he talked about getting on his knees and saying a prayer to a God he didn't believe in 3 years ago, and from that day to this day, he's not picked up a drink. And he said, "I think there might be a connection." And it got me because I didn't believe in God, and I was thinking, well, if I say a prayer, will it work on me? And he talked about principles, and I didn't know what a principle was, but if there's scientific principles that he was talking about. He was talking about boiling water, and whether you liked it or not, whether you believed it or not, the water was going to boil it if you heated it up to 100 degrees Celsius. Whether you like it or not, it's a principle. And he said, much like scientific principles, there's spiritual principles. And he said, so if you believe in God and you get on your knees, or you don't believe in God and you get on your knees, it's going to have a similar effect, whether you like it or not. And so the next morning I said, what the heck? I was desperate enough to finally do it somebody else's way. And I got on my knees, I said a prayer to a God I didn't believe in, and from that day to this day I've not picked up a drink. I think there might be a connection. I mean, I didn't have a bright white light experience. I didn't start believing in God. What happened was I was finally willing to follow somebody else's direction. And if I want to have a result that I've never had before in my life, I have to take some action that's very unfamiliar with me that will probably not make sense. And so what happened, they gave me some other ideas in rehab, some good, some bad. But one of them, they told me to go to meetings. So I figured, what the heck, I'll try that. And they told me to get rides to meetings, and they told me something about a sponsor, and they said I probably shouldn't lie so much, and said something about not hitting people. And I tried to stab a guy in rehab. He was judging me. So what happened was I get a ride to the meeting from my mom, and I tell her that, you know, the meeting's over at 9. If you could be here a little bit before so I can get out of here, I'd appreciate it. And she said, well, why don't you get a ride? You told me in rehab they wanted you to get rides. I said, well, it's kind of early. It's too, you know, I'm not really ready for that. I don't know if this is the right meeting for me to get rides from people. And she said, well, you should start. I'm not going to pick you up. And so I reminded my mom that, you know, she probably wasn't the best mom. Okay? If you look at me and how I'm turning out, I'm suspect that maybe she could have done a better job. Right? And I was trying to remind her of that, but she just drove away. So I'm in the meeting, and I'm standing there, and I look at everybody. They all seem like they're best friends, and I sit down, and I don't talk to anybody. I don't look at anybody. They start the meeting, and I just sat there for 58 minutes thinking about how I was going to get a ride home. And it was December 1987. It was 10 degrees, and my parents' house was a couple miles away at least, and I didn't think I was going to make it. And it got down toward the last couple minutes of the meeting, and I just put my hand up while somebody else was sharing, and I said, "Yeah, Jim, just got a rehab. Just anybody give me a ride, really appreciate it." And the lady's like, "What?" And she didn't know if she should keep sharing. Everybody's like, "Who was that? What happened?" And then I was like, "Okay, fine. I did it. They told me to do it." And they were about to pray. And I don't pray with people at this point. I'm not holding hands because it's flu season. Okay? And I've seen some of the people in the bathroom. They don't even wash their hands. So I was like, "I'm not going to hold their hands. No way." And so what I did was I went outside and waited for my rides. I figured they'd line up and I could pick somebody that was maybe an attorney or something, somebody that could help me. And so what happened was I was standing out there and some guy comes out and he just walked away, didn't pay any attention to me. And I was thinking, I don't like AA. You know, and then some girl came out and she wasn't friendly at all. And she ran off and I was thinking, you know what? I tried. I did what they told me to do. Bunch of hypocrites. All these people. Well, only two people had come out, and they had snuck out of the meeting early. But I hated AA, and I was thinking, you know what? They're looking for a coffee maker. Next week, I'll come back. I'll help make coffee. I'll put 100 hits of acid in the coffee pot. We'll have a good meeting. Finally have a good meeting. And I had no money. I just got caught embezzling. And so I wasn't going to have money for a while. But had I had money, I would have done it. And then I was thinking, well, you know what? No money. I'll come late, and then when they're all in there, I'll slash everybody's tires, and then after the meeting, we could all walk home together. And well, the guy from AA that was ultimately going to become my sponsor comes walking out, and he called over me. He goes, "I can give you rides." I was like, "Oh." And he asked where I lived, and I told him, and he lived two blocks from where my parents lived. I was like, "This is spooky," you know. I was thinking the government had been watching me, okay? I was thinking, this is weird. And then I thought about the prayer, and I'm thinking, no, there's not really a God. I'm not going to believe, but it's really kind of weird. I don't think he's government. And he goes, "Hey, do you want to tag along? We're going to go to the diner." And I was like, and so I put my hand into my empty pocket, and I go, "Well," and that means I have no money, and we'll just call it quits here. And he had a weird response. He said, no, you're supposed to be broke. You're new. My treat." He goes, "Quite frankly, if you weren't broke, we'd be suspicious." I started laughing. I got in the car. And, of course, he had, like, some brown nosers with him. You know, he was, like, listening to every word he had to say. You know, and so I don't know if you've ever been to the diner with these people. You're new here. And you go to the, don't go to the diner. Don't, absolutely don't. They're going to embarrass you. Just humiliating. They sit you at a table with a bunch of, like, families in the area, and they start talking about things that are just, you don't talk about in public, you know. I mean, forget about the statute of limitations, but these guys are describing sex acts that you just don't even want to know about. Not that I hadn't done them, too. I just wasn't going to talk about it. But I was laughing by the end of the night. The guy gives me a ride home. He says, "I'll pick you up tomorrow at 7. I was thinking, how does he know I don't have plans? My night was free, and I was ready, and he picked me up, and of course, it's with the brown nosers in the car, and I got to sit in the back. They don't give me I figured I'm a little bit older than some of these kids. I could sit up front. They put me in the back, you know, and they're, you know, talking about steps and, you know, this and that, and I felt like I was the only one that really had a formal education from rehab, and maybe I should throw a few pointers into the mix. So I heard a little pause, and I just jumped right in with some ideas I had. It got real quiet. Right? Everybody looked at me. They looked at the driver. And he turns back. He goes, "Why don't you just shut the hell up before you kill somebody?" I was like, this guy's not very nice. So I shut up. Right? It was the kindest thing he could have ever done. Thank God they weren't brain surgeons. I would have had a comment or two. I would have had some ideas. But he shut me up. And, you know, don't ever ask where you're going. Like, you got something better to do, kid. You know, so I made that mistake before. But we go to a meeting, and we get there, and they don't tell you where they're going, don't tell you how you're going to get home, so you're going to have to behave a little bit, I'm sure. So we get to the meeting, and the guy says, "Okay, we're going to sit up front." I don't do that. You know, the front row. You know, guys in the back, you know, the people in the front. Need I say more? Right? I'm not gonna do it, you know? But I'm thinking it's cold. It's, I don't know where we are. I'm gonna freeze to death. So I sat down, you know, because I needed a ride home. He sat next to me, and the secretary starts meeting. Says, any newcomers? He leans over. He goes, put your hand up. I go, back off. Just back off. Right? And the secretary says, what, no newcomers? He assaulted me. I didn't know you could do that in AA. He stuck his elbow in my ribs, and he said, you know, some things that I can't say from the podium. But he said some things that were colorful, and I was about to hit him, but the secretary looked over and called on me. He said, yes. And I'm like, oh. Everybody in the meeting staring at me. I'm looking around. I almost threw up. I'm gagging. I'm like, I couldn't. I was like, oh my, do I put my hand up? Do I just talk? I don't know what, I have no idea what to do. You know? So I put my hand up, and everybody's looking at me like, dude, it's a little redundant, you know, just, and I'm like, fine. 29 days, I just got out of rehab. All of a sudden, thunderous applause. Overnight, I had become a rock star in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody's clapping and cheering, just loving me. I was like, oh my, look at these are my people. I mean, AA's messed up, man. I mean, it messed up. You talk to people, you know, they've been here for decades and decades. They get no respect. Okay? We don't even like you. You know, you go to a business meeting, you got 20, 30, 40 years. They're like, yeah. You know, you go to talk to somebody about some important topic, they're like walking away. You know what I mean? Who do they love? Oh, look it, it's Billy. New ankle bracelet, Billy? Now, Billy's got 4 sobriety dates this week, right? He just put $1 in the basket, took change for $20 again, okay? He's like looking at the urinal peeing in the sink. Okay, this guy's messed up, but we love you, Billy. You're the most important guy in the meeting. You know. Okay, but that was me. I was like, hey, loving AA. I couldn't wait for the next meeting. You know, next day he picks me up. I get in the car. They're going to have a guy there. They're going to ask how long I'm still, because I got 30 days. Now, completely unearned 30 days. When you're locked up for 28 of them, okay, it's not right you're celebrating. Maybe 2 days you could celebrate, okay. But, you know, I was willing to tell people how to do it now. I had some big ideas. So he takes me to a meeting. The guy says, any newcomer? I jump out of my chair. Thunderous applause again. And I tell you, I love AA. I love AA until somebody else got out of rehab. Right? Yeah. A couple weeks later, this guy comes in. Any newcomers? Charlie, 17 days sober. Thunderous applause for Charlie. I lean to the guy next to me. I go, how do we know he's even alcoholic? Right? I think maybe we should have a breathalyzer, somebody keeping track. You know what I mean? I don't want to do this anymore. You know, I don't want to do this. Forget about it. You know, and what happens is I go to these meetings where people, I guess they were real. I mean, some people call them psychopaths, but I love these meetings where people just say it. It doesn't matter. What comes out, it comes out. Because I hadn't been real a day in my life. But these guys, some meetings I go to, and they were just rough guys, rough girls, you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, some guy shared that he ran somebody over on the way to the meeting. I was like, this guy's awesome. This guy's fantastic. I love him. This is fantastic. I couldn't wait for, you know, it was like, I would laugh, and it would be the first full breath I took the whole day. You know, I was working on Wall Street. I got caught embezzling. I owed my boss $55,000. Everything was, I had fires in everywhere, you know, every area of my life. I had warrants from towns I'd never been to. 3 years of unopened mail, 6 years of unfiled tax. Everything was just horrible, you know, and I was just thinking about everything all day. I would set the alarm for like 6:30, and I wake up at 2:30 and 3:30 and 4:30, and I sleep through my alarm. Right? And I was like, oh, I can't believe I did it again. You know, I'd hitchhike to the train station. I get into New York, and I just wait till they called the meeting so I could go into the cafeteria and steal somebody's lunch. Okay, because that's the only way I was going to eat. You know, and one thing leads to another. I'm going to meetings, and I discover that me going to meetings and not working the steps is like me going to a bar and not drinking. is not enough. For a little while is good. It's good, but it's not enough. Not for me. I got to have something better than drinking. You know, I've tried everything to feel good. And if I can't find something better in Alcoholics Anonymous than I can on the street, I know where it is. And you're not going to be able to hold me back. And the problem is, I won't be able to hold me back. So what happens is I go to one of these meetings and, you know, some lady's talking about her cat and how her cat's sick. And I'm like, is your cat an alcoholic? Right? I go to this other meeting, some guy's sharing about how he wasn't breastfed. I was like, was this recent? It's like, dude, what's going on here? You know, and I get home, I'm sicker than I was when I got to the meeting. Right? And so what happens is I call this guy up from AA. He said, call anytime. Call anytime. He goes, I go, what am I going to say? He goes, don't worry, I'll take it from there. So I get home from the meeting. I wait till 1 o'clock because I had to think about it. Right? And I call him and I wake him up, and he's a good member of AA because he said I didn't wake him. And one thing leads to another, invites me over his house, and I said yes, and I hung up before he could change his mind. I ride my little sister's purple swing to his house at 1 o'clock in the morning, and he welcomed me into his home. He made me a sandwich because he's a good member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then he started telling me his story. Now, that was different. They sent me to a therapist. They never told me their stories. Now, this guy told me a story. He said, well, I was, you know, he's working in New York. He's getting drunk in New York. He got sober working in New York, which I thought was completely unbelievable. He goes, one night, I'm in New York. I'm with this other guy. We're wasted, just totally polluted. And we're in the back of this cab. Another cab comes around the corner, smashes in the cab. I go, yeah? He goes, well, drivers got out. They're arguing back and forth. He said, I got tired of waiting. I jumped up front and took the cab. I thought, that's very cool. Now, if he had told me how wonderful he was and how he had all the, you know, his perfect credit rating and his, you know, one marriage, you know, some stuff like that, you know, I would have gotten the heck out of there, right? So one thing leads to another. He says, well, next thing you know, we're in the tombs. I go, this guy's been in the tombs? He said, yeah, they had us shackled. I was like, oh, I've been shackled in the tombs. He said, yeah, it was kind of odd. I said, why is that? He goes, well, I looked down side to side, and there was a woman on each side. I said, whoa, 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 they separate the men and women. He goes, well, I looked down, they had really big hands. I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I was like, and I started getting honest with him. I didn't even know how it slipped out. I said, well, that's nothing. One night, I was down by Washington Square Park. I'm drinking some wild turkey. Next thing you know, I'm chasing this transvestite around the park with a hatchet. Now, you can't bring that to therapy. Okay? Now, I'm not judgmental. The fact is, I wanted my money back. Okay? I tell him this story. He looks at me. He starts laughing. He told me another story. Now, that went back and forth. And then I told him a story about picking some guy up hitchhiking. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we decided we were going to keep him. Okay? Now, people were calling that kidnapping. All right? He thought it was funny. So I told him another one. Right? And that went back and forth maybe an hour and a half. And in about an hour and a half, this guy knew more about me than 20 years of therapists combined. And I looked up from his shoes. I looked him in the eyes. He had blue eyes. I had never looked him in the face. I was completely different. Something happened to me that was just absolutely marvelous. I felt a closeness with another person I can only describe as God. And I thanked him, and I thanked him. And I said, he said, dude, don't worry. You're doing more for me than I'm doing for you. And I didn't understand. Because when he told me he was getting divorced and losing his home and this and that, I just ignored it. It's useless. It doesn't involve me. You know, maybe he won't loan me money or as much. You know, I didn't really care. Okay? And I'll tell you, he said the only condition we have in Alcoholics Anonymous, people do anything for you. But when the phone rings, you say yes. When it's your turn, you say yes. And that's it. You know? And he never asked me to repay food or housing and anything, really. He just did for me. And I thought the guy was the biggest sucker until I started sponsoring guys. Right? And then he said, don't give less than what was given to you. You know, and this man took me he took me on vacation. I was a mess. He's going to Hawaii with some guys in AA. He goes, I got freaking with my father and miles. We're afraid to leave you by yourself. Do you want to come? I was like, yeah, sucker. You know? You know, I'll tell you, fast forward, a number of years later, I'm going to Hawaii, I'm going with this girl, and we're gonna have a good time. I'm telling my sponsees, okay, you're gonna hang out with him, and you're gonna do this, and you're gonna do that. And one guy goes, well, wait a minute, didn't you say that your sponsor took you to Hawaii? Oh. Nine of us went. All right? is what it is. I get a call from the psych unit. Now, I'm having some business problems, and they call me to the psych unit, and I don't think I'm qualified, right? My sponsor's always, he's like one of these guys. God doesn't use the qualified. He uses the willing in Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, look at the moon. Look how it illuminates the night sky. It's in the right place at the right time. It's willing. The source of the power is so magnificent that even the sun could use the moon to illuminate the night sky. Just think what God could do for you. I'm like, dude, whatever. But you can't, like, argue with somebody who believes. You know what I mean? He might not give me a ride. So I get a call from the psych unit, and they go, oh, we got a guy, man. He's a mess. He tried to kill himself. Can you come talk to him? Problem is, I was running an ad agency. I just lost $30,000 on a deal. I could not afford the loss, and I'm fighting with somebody. And I'm like, oh, my sponsor's going to find out. So I go. I postpone the conference call. I go. I get there. I look through the window. It's this homeless guy. He's got black, like, T-shirt that, like, stuck to his body is different colors, and he's got wine sewers, and he's got his hair all matted to his head, and I'm like, what am I going to do with this? And so I'm like, okay, God, take over, and what comes out of my mouth is, hey, my name's Jim, I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, chances are if I get the opportunity tonight to tell my story, I might not pick up a drink. Do you think I could tell you my story? And the first thing he had said in 8 days, because he was catatonic, was, okay. And the only story I could imagine that he would ever understand is that I had been kind of homeless. So I said, well, I was almost homeless. I was living behind my girlfriend's parents' furnace in their basement, sneaking in and out. Now, she let me use her car on occasion, and I totaled it. And before the cops came, I had to switch seats because I didn't have my license. I had lost that long before, but it didn't seem like information that you want to share with somebody whose car you would want to borrow. So she gets a brand new car, and she won't let me drive it, considering I was the one responsible for the insurance money, so she got the car, which I was trying to remind her. The homeless guy understood it. And so it goes back and forth, but I had disappeared for a few days, and I was a little sick, and I got pain where there's no organs, you know what I mean? There's like, what's this? What organ? There's nothing, dude. You should go to the hospital. I'm like, nah, I'm okay. And so I get in her car. She's got light blue velour seats, and she's driving. She's, yeah, where are you at? And I thought I had a little bit of gas. I look back. I crap my pants in her car, right? Now, I look over. All of a sudden, the homeless guy goes, ha, 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 I did that. Now, I look over at his sweatpants. I'm thinking, yeah, like 15 minutes ago. Right? So he starts telling me a little story. I start telling him a story. Goes back and forth, I don't know, hour, two, three. I have no idea. But when I left there, I had not a fear in the world. Everything was wonderful. My whole life was complete. I'll tell you, when I serve God, God is everywhere. When I serve me, God is nowhere. You know, 99% of my recovery is trying to help other people. 1% is going through the steps. Why do I need to do the steps? Not to get a better job, not to pay back my creditors, so I can help other people. I mean, it's like you're in the military. You go to boot camp. Why do you go to boot camp? Well, not to get you in shape. It's because you're going to have to fight someone. That's the whole deal. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, the whole deal is being a service to other people. And when I'm doing that, man, I feel good. When I'm not doing that, oh, it's not pretty. I'm looking at everybody, hating them. I'm just looking at taking inventory. I'm living in fear. Just everything is terrible, unless I'm serving God. I'm wired that way. Maybe other people aren't, but I'm wired that way, where I have to live my life to serve God. If I don't do that, my life becomes terrible. And the longer I'm sober, the more difficult it is sometimes. The road narrows. What I could get away with 10 years ago, I couldn't get away with 5 years ago. What I could get away with last year, I can't get away with it this year. When I sponsor a new guy, he goes, well, I did this. I go, oh, man, I used to do that too. Good luck, man. Just enjoy it. Hope you don't get arrested. And I'm not going to tell him what to do. I mean, I did some of the stupid things that he had done. I'd share what I'm doing now because it makes me more comfortable. I'm not a good guy because I want to be a good guy. I'm a good guy because I don't want to live in terror. I file my taxes because I like to sleep at night. I don't make enemies. I don't criticize people. I don't attack people. I hardly give anybody the finger. Okay, because I don't want other people to, you know, to drive into New York today. I only gave, it was kind of under the window. You know what I mean? They didn't see it. Okay? But I'll tell you, my life is a dream because of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I got here, nothing was good. There were fires in every area of my life. My family, if you were to look at it, were three rungs lower than the Jerry Springer show. We wouldn't make the audition. Nobody in my family has ever gone to college. You know, cousin, oh, where's Ricky? Oh, he's studying abroad. No, he's in prison. Okay? Everybody goes to prison. Everybody dies early. Nobody goes to college. Because Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a couple college degrees. My daughter has a college degree. You know, my life is damn good, man. Better than it ever had a right to be. So anyway, thank you for letting me share.